together again, kicking off a brand new week and a brand new month on Monday, June the 2nd, 2025, right here on Connecticut Today. I wondered out loud as state budget talks again run up against another deadline if Connecticut lawmakers should be in Hartford on a full-time basis to avoid some bad lawmaking. Trumbull Republican State Representative Dave Rattigliano dropped by to chat about the latest news regarding those state budget talks in Hartford. Commuter columnist and advocate Jim Cameron talked about his latest column detailing the state's potential loss of millions of dollars yearly through vehicles being improperly registered out of state. Connecticut News Junkie columnist and Substack.com blogger Terry Cowgill dropped by with some thoughts on the recent Trump White House pardon for former Connecticut Governor John Rowland, and CBS News military analyst and U.S. Army Colonel Jeff McCausland analyzed recent news of a major sneak attack by Ukraine on Russian military forces. This attack right out of a Saturday movie. So imagine you're in a managerial or high-ranking position at a major company. Now, we're not talking about mom and dad, greasy spoon kind of great place where you go for that cheeseburger at 1 a.m. No. Let's imagine you're in a boardroom 5 days a week. Let's imagine you have a beautiful corner office. You're a big boss, okay? So let's lapse into that as we begin another week right here, okay? So a few months earlier, right, you're sitting there with your board of directors. You say, hey, I have an idea. And the board of directors looks at you and says, yeah, what's that, Paul? What the hell are you doing here? No, seriously. You say, hey, I want to acquire XYZ Corporation. And you make your case. You say, hey, you know, this corporation is growing. You could supplement our business. Okay, so you make your presentation. Now, the people in the boardroom there, the real higher-ups, the muckety-mucks, the highest of the high, in your corporation, they say, what's it going to cost? And you say, listen, I've run some preliminary numbers, and it's going to cost about $55 billion. All right. And let's assume this happened, you know, they finance it over 30 years, whatever, 30, 40 years. You get a consortium, you get a private equity firm, whatever, and you tell them, hey, look, I know it's a lot of money. It's $55 billion, but Lord knows we can make this work. Okay, so the next step is you make your CFO and your head of accounting, your head of investments, right? You say, listen, you got to put this all in writing for me, right? Let's put it all in writing. Okay. Now, you tell them, this is months ago. Play along here. You'll see what I'm getting at. This is months ago. And the board of directors says, when do they want to know by? And you say they have a hard date of June 5th, Wednesday the 5th of June. But you did this months ago. This is not today. As we speak here on June 2nd, right? Months ago, you said, hey, I've talked to their board of directors, their CFO, their CEO's an old buddy of mine. We went to Harvard or Yale together. So we said, okay, but I need to know for my people by November 5th. Now, if your financial people came to you and said, okay, Paul, we'll have all these numbers for you, and you say, hey, that's great. When will you have them for me? Early on the morning of June 2nd. And you would say, I would think if you're any kind of a person with a brain, you would say, whoa, wait a minute. We're thinking of spending $55, $57, $56 billion. We have a deadline, an agreed deadline with XYZ Company. If we're going to merge, we need to know, we need to at least shake hands on it, sign a memorandum of understanding by Wednesday, June 5th. And you want me to see the numbers early on the morning of June 2nd? So you're giving me two and a half business days to figure out if we're spending $55 or $57 billion wisely? What are you, nuts? All right, let's fast forward now to the present day at 13 past 2 on this Monday, June 2nd, 2025. I got a text message this morning as I was rolling over. Compadre of mine up in Hartford says, yep, they just got the budget in Hartford. Now, mind you, folks, mind you, the legislature has to be done by Wednesday. This happens every freaking year that they do this. The General Assembly, which means basically the majority Democrats there who get to run wild and rampant over the place like a fire drill, they expect everybody in their caucus and, more importantly, the arrogance of them expects the people on the Republican side of the caucus to be able to take a critical look at spending. 50-something billion dollars, roughly $26, $27 billion a year for the next 2 years, and they expect a lot of people up there to be able to make an informed decision on that in 2.5 days. By going over, you know how big this bill is? I've been told it's about 700 pages. These people are not serious. The people that run the state of Connecticut, the majority Democrats in Hartford, they're not serious. These are not serious, grounded people. They're not. How on God's green and blue and white and golden earth, pick a color, how do you expect grown men and women to make an informed, critical decision on spending money in 2.5 days into the billions of dollars? Now, you could say, well, Paul, they kind of had a little bit of an inkling. Oh, yeah, they may have had an inkling. But you folks, do you understand what I'm telling you? A 700-page plan to spend 50-something billion dollars for the next 2 years of my tax money and your tax money dropped this morning, and it's got to be agreed to by late Wednesday. That's asinine. That is not the project or the product, I should say, serious people. It's just not. It's not. Now, why does this happen? Because we have stupid deadlines in this state. And how do you get rid of stupid deadlines? Follow along with me now. Just relax. Don't jump down my throat. Don't jump up my backside. I don't need that. I'm having my annual urological examination in a few weeks, but I digress. I don't need that. You know what we need? We need a full-time legislature. I know I'm already getting the blowback on Facebook. Oh my God, they screw up the state. Why would you want them full time? You know what? You know why I want some of those morons in Hartford to be up there full time? Because then they don't have an excuse. Then they can't hide. I'm telling you, this budget's going to be voted on late Tuesday before the deadline into Thursday. 700 plus pages, 50-something billion dollars. Do you think, let me ask you a serious question here. And of course, we start out with my question, should the state adopt a full-time legislature to avoid this last-minute crap, budgets and legislation and bills passed up against a deadline? This is ridiculous. So that's question number one. Question number two is, do you think anybody in Hartford really reads 700-plus pages in 2 days and understands what's going on here? Come on. Stop. I think you and I know the answer to that. But to my bigger question here, to start us off on a brand new week, with 2 days to go before they will eventually jam through a budget which will have all kinds of surprises in it, should the state adopt a full-time legislature? Full-time. Keep them there 12 months a year just to avoid last-minute budgets and legislation jammed through on an idiotic deadline. Seriously, imagine being in a boardroom and you're telling your board of directors, I want to spend 50-something billion dollars on a merger or an acquisition, and they ask you, when can we see the financials? And you say, it's going to be 2 days before we have to sign off on it. they'd fire you. They'd throw you out the window. But this is how we do budgets in Connecticut. It's mind-numbing. This happens every 2 years, and it's sickening. It's sickening. I'm telling you, this is ridiculous. Well, you know, they work hard. Yes, so what? Jeez. Does this make any sense at all? And you know what happens? The majority Democrats do that. Hey, folks, don't think the Republicans have any say here. The only thing the Republicans can do is slow it down so it crashes and nothing is signed, which I'd all be all in favor of. They should talk this thing to death. Blow it up. Leave plenty of destruction in Hartford. This is ridiculous. Well, that's not good, Paul. No, it's not. But the way we get to this end, every freaking budget cycle is mind-numbing. Let's just go to a full-time legislature. Oh, you can't have them up there full-time. Why not? I'd rather have them up there full-time than them jamming multi-year spending bills in while everybody is half-stew-nod Tuesday night or Wednesday night of the General Assembly. It doesn't make any sense. Clear-thinking people shouldn't have to be poring through budget pages at 2 or 3 in the morning, yet we do it every cycle, partly because a lot of you people out there are idiots when you vote. I'm sorry to say it. I love you much. But you send the same majority back to Hartford every 2 years, and this is what you get. It's a trick. This doesn't have to happen. They know. It's like you and I, when we were growing up, when we were in school, and we got a bad grade on something, and our teacher said, you know, you should have taken more time on this because you know when the deadline is. But they know how to game the system. It's mind-numbing. We need a full-time legislature. Pay them a little more, pay them 60 or 70 bucks a year, and leave them up there all year. This last-minute stuff is revolting, and it's disgusting. This budget should have been done 2 or 3 months ago. Well, it takes a long time, Paul. I don't care. Get it done. Jose in Shelton starts us off. Jose, how are you? What's up?
Hey, good afternoon on this Monday.
Yeah.
Me and you have been agreeing a little more. I've been putting this proposal out there for years.
Uh-huh.
Full-time legislature.
Yep.
6 months up in Hartford.
Yep.
6 months, go door to door and ask your constituents what they think about what you're doing.
Yeah.
And another thing, here's the clicker.
Yeah.
No more sleeping in your office.
No.
3 in the morning. Listen, Paul. I got
that. Yeah, you're right.
You know what they got to do?
What?
They got to build them all condos up in Hartford, right by the Capitol. No, listen to me. Don't laugh.
All right.
Each member. Get the condo.
Yeah.
When they lose election, yeah. The next member gets like this. They could be rested. They could take a nice shower, bath, and then go to the chamber with a clear mind instead of sleeping till 3 in the morning. And then at 7, they got to do a vote on a budget they never read.
It's crazy, Jose. That's it. They don't read this stuff.
That 10,000-page budget, they never even read one page. Like this, they're clear-minded, and they can make the right decisions.
Yeah.
And also, like you said, pay them more, and you'll get a better quality of legislation.
You will. Jose, thank you, my friend. You see, there's Jose. Jose is a clear-thinking, old-time Democrat. He's not a liberal, leftist, pinko nut job like they have in that party. Jose, I don't think you'd have to build 151 condos for the House. And 36 of them for the state Senate. I don't know if the state taxpayer is going to want to pick up the nut for 187 condos in Hartford. Maybe a dorm. Maybe that's what Jose was. Maybe you give. Hey, I had a single room at BU. Barely enough. I had a closet, a dresser, a bed, which was a mattress. Forget the box spring. Who had that in college? A mattress on a steel frame, a walk-in closet, a desk, and a dresser with just enough room for a little fridge and a telephone. That was it. That's what we need. Dormitories for the General Assembly up in Hartford. Talking a lot about the budget process. In the middle of that is Trumbull GOP State Rep Dave Rattigliano, who's here to give us an update as to what's going on. Dave, good afternoon, sir. Good to have you back. How are you?
Good afternoon, Paul. I'm coming to you from the Golden Dome.
And what is the state of decorum there, Mr. Rattigliano, between the men and women who are crafting, I guess, sausage here, as they say that lawmaking is? But give us an update on this budget bill, which I guess, Dave, as usual, gets dropped near the end of the whole process here.
Well, the sausage has been made. It came out this morning at 3:54.
Mm-hmm.
So via the 12-hour rule to actually read it, we have till 4 o'clock this afternoon, and we're about to take up the budget that will obliterate all our safety nets, our fiscal guardrails, and our spending caps.
How much of this, Dave? Now, I know different lawmakers work at different speeds, but how do you deal with something that's given to you that I hear is about 700 pages or so, knowing that you have to vote on this in about a day and a half here? I mean, to me, on the surface, that, and most of my callers are saying, well, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, well, we have a team of people, including legislators, that sit there and they comb over every section, mm-hmm. or they'll divide up sections just so they could tell what's in it. Because it's not just the budget, which is sort of the spending document. It comes with an implementer, which is a big document to implement the budget. And lots of legislation gets put into the implementer that didn't get passed by the House, stuff that couldn't get through, too controversial,
mm-hmm.
or they ran out of time, or they just don't feel like having a debate about it on the floor. They'll stick it into the implementer.
Yeah, so that's it. And Dave, that's interesting, and I stress that to my listeners here. So it's weird here in Connecticut. There is an implementer, as you say, which is essentially the keys to the car, and they actually hide stuff in there. And I know you may not want to use the term, but you hear the colloquialism of rats, and you're looking for those rats right now, I would assume.
Yeah, so some of them are just overt bills that they put in the implementer that you could read. They're easily visible. But yes, there are rats, which are usually a half a sentence, a little sentence, something buried in lines 3,000, whatever, that nobody knows about till after it passes. And then all of a sudden, surprise, this was in the budget. Usually they're favors. Mm-hmm. If you look at this budget, it's got earmarks galore.
Really?
We're giving money to Bangladeshi whatever and a Pakistani doctors association. And you name it. We're paying off the lunch debt for two towns in eastern Connecticut that were probably used to buy some senator's vote. There's about 40 of these in particular items that are in there that you get to go through. There is some legislation that's in there. The big controversial SB2, which was the big AI bill the governor swore that he didn't want to pass and he was going to veto, is actually in the implementer. So either he agreed to it or he rolled over. Not really sure. He's turned out to be a lot squishier than we thought he was.
Dave, the AI bill is in the implementer?
It's in the implementer, yeah. Not the entire bill, but certain parts of the bill. Section 2 of the bill is in the implementer. I find it odd because the governor was so adamantly against it. And then all of a sudden, here it goes. There is some chatter up here on how may that might have happened, but some convenient poll came out last week and had the governor down 10 points. We don't really know who paid or commissioned the poll, but he seems to have heeded the warning of the 52% approval rating.
And again, and Dave Rattigliano is the guest at Trumbull, a Republican state rep. And Dave, it's interesting now because he, at least what I was hearing from him publicly, I haven't spoken to him, but this is the guy that was walking around saying, hey, I don't like this because of my business background, and this is the kind of thing that high tech is going to see and not like Connecticut. But you say at least part of it's in there now. Shocking.
Part of it's in there. Listen, you have to give the governor credit for one thing since he got elected. He has been the beneficiary of some of the best financial decisions Connecticut's made in three generations.
Yeah.
The 2017 bipartisan budget has paid so many dividends. We've paid off so much debt. We have record surpluses. We did a massive tax decrease a couple of years ago for people. And in one swoop or one poll or one session or one election that went the wrong way last November for Connecticut, they are undoing everything we've done. They are eviscerating the fiscal guardrails. They're adding billions of dollars in new taxes and spending. Connecticut will never be the same. It will go back to the era of Malloy. 3-4 years from now, they'll be talking about how we're running out of money and we're going to have to raise taxes.
And Dave, finally, do you think the governor will stand his ground here and veto that bill and go against the bill that would pay private industry striking workers, pay them unemployment? Do you think he will stand firm on that?
You know, he said that he's going to veto it, but I have to be honest with you, Paul. After reading this budget and all the things that are in here that he swore he wouldn't do,
yeah,
I would be very concerned. And we don't go against the employees. It's not about the employees. It's about that fund. It's taken us 10 years to get that unemployment fund where it's solvent enough to take care of people if they lose their job. Because in 07 and 08, we had to borrow $1 billion from the federal government just to cover our current unemployment. And that caused a lot of problems. So for them to even consider dipping into that fund for anything but the fact that people lose their job through no circumstance of their own is offensive to a lot of people.
All right, Dave, now prepare for the next few hours. Be good. Make sure you carb up. Make sure you hydrate there. Stay safe in the under the Golden Dome. All right, Dave?
Thank you, sir. Have a great afternoon. I'm sorry to be the bearer of bad news.
Oh, no, that's all right. Dave, always good to hear from you. State Rep. Dave Vertigliano from Trumbull. So there you go. All right, let's talk about something here, and we'll get back to open phones momentarily at 333-9422, 333-WICC. Let's talk about something that has driven me nuts for years. And I know people that do this, and I'm all for operating within the limits of any law, as long as the law is reasonably passed and you're adhering to it, okay. But we have a big problem with this issue, even though the laws were passed and stand as they are. Our buddy, our pal, Jim Cameron, Talking Transportation, is the regular column. You see it in numerous places, including the Connecticut Mirror, and also Mr. Cameron's own blog spot, which is talkingtransportation.blogspot.com, any other sites. Jim, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
I'm fine, sir, and yourself?
I'm getting along, Jim. Like I always say, I think it's too late for law school, so I'll just ride this one out as long as I can. Jim, thank you for this. This is a great column about what you call license plate fraud. This is not new, Jim, and I've been talking about this for years, and there are people who try and game the system here, and as you say, it's costing money. It's costing the state a lot of money.
Yeah, and we're not talking about those people that, put special lenses on their license plates.
Oh, God.
Or alter the plates.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a more recent tax avoidance scheme. Mm-hmm. What we're talking about is people who register their cars out of state. They live in Connecticut,
yep,
but for some reason they're driving around with Vermont or Maine or New York plates because it costs less to register the car in those locations. And importantly, they don't pay the property tax, mm-hmm, to their Connecticut municipality. Now, I spoke with an expert on this who is a town tax assessor, president of the state association, and she estimates there's something like $1 billion a year that's being lost in tax revenue by the towns and the cities,
wow,
because of this. And the problem is that no one is enforcing it. I spoke to the commissioner of the Department of Motor Vehicles, and he said, "Jimmy, we don't have the people to do that. You know, we just register the cars. We're not
don't look at us
division." Yeah, yeah. So the only way these people get caught is if one, a neighbor,
mm-hmm,
maybe makes a discreet phone call.
A snitch. You can say snitch. Go ahead. We'll allow that. Yeah, go ahead. All right.
Well, but snitches get stitches. I mean, you can report this anonymously,
yes,
in most cases.
Yes.
You know, as I say, a discreet phone call to, yeah, town hall,
mm-hmm,
tax assessor,
yeah,
and say, you know, you might want to check out Sally Smith, who lives up the street, because her car is parked there all the time. And she's got plates from Montana.
I know.
Now, Montana, you know, apparently you can get plates on your car from Montana without ever going to Montana.
Wait, they'll mail
any intention
they'll
of
mail
going to Montana.
You can get them mailed to you?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And apparently Maine also will do this for you. Now, we're sharing information here on how to game the system. I hope you're writing this down at home, you home players here. Maine,
Montana.
Yeah, and a couple other states. Maine will send them to you. They promise it within like 48 hours. There are agencies up there that will do that for you. Now, this is not what is legal, which is called tax avoidance.
Mm-hmm.
This is tax evasion, because you are breaking the law and you are costing other people in your community money. You know, if you went into a store and you saw somebody stealing something from the store, you might, you know, maybe you'd say something, maybe you just kind of chuckle. But you got to know that the price of everything you're buying in that store is going to go up because someone else is ripping them off. Same thing with this. If somebody in your neighborhood or your city is using out-of-state plates, that means that your property tax is going to be higher because they're not paying this property tax themselves.
Jim,
this is a problem. I mean, apparently in Bridgeport, they have done some, you know, they've gone around, they've hired a third party to drive around with license plate readers. It's not Bridgeport. I take it back. It was Danbury.
Okay.
They found 8,000 cars in Danbury that were being registered out of state. Stamford caught about that same number, 8,000 cars, and that brought in an additional $1.3 million to the city of Stamford.
And, Jim, in the times we're in, I know there are people probably now, Jim Cameron, hearing, there's that Cameron guy again, there's Paul, blah, 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 the do-gooders. No, because, Jim, we're in a time here where, would you say, $1.something million for Danbury? How many teaching jobs would that have saved? Or would that have saved a music program at one of the elementary schools? I mean, this is how I think you have to think about this stuff. And you're right. There is a difference between legally using tax strategies, and maybe you do live in a certain spot where this is technically legal, versus essentially stealing money. I'll say that, if not you. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Now, there are some people who are fortunate enough, perhaps, to live 6 months out of the year in Florida or someplace warm. And if you live 6 months and one day in any location, you can register your car in that state.
Mm-hmm.
So these people drive around with Florida plates up here in Connecticut, and they'll go, yeah, but I'm a legal Florida resident. And yes, they are. But if they drive that same car for 90 days anywhere in Connecticut, they also have to pay the property tax here. Keep your Florida plates if you want to, but you still got to pay your pound of flesh. You still got to pay your property tax, your fair share, because you're living in the community, you're taking advantage of the fire department, the police department, the school system, etc. So I just wish there was a little more enforcement on this by our Department of Motor Vehicles. But they're kind of like throwing their hands up in the air and kind of going, it's not our job. We don't have the staff to be able to do that.
Yeah, and I remember, Jim, years ago, well before I worked here for the second time, I was at another station up in Hamden, and I think I remember that time the Hamden police and some other police departments in the state, and maybe this is where they get these numbers from, they actually were kind of just circling parking lots. I remember jotting down or taking photos of people with, okay, it's Hamden, you know, what's a Montana plate or a South Dakota plate doing there? So, yeah, my inkling, Jim Cameron, is, you know, maybe it is a manpower thing, but you would think that even with minimal return on investment here, they may want to do something, or is this, I don't know, they just don't want to ruffle feathers? I don't know, because like you say, the money numbers are pretty daunting here.
Yeah, and the people that have been caught by private companies hired by cities.
Mm.
And what they do is they literally drive around at night, okay?
No.
And they have license plate readers on their cars.
Mm-hmm.
And they keep track of this. And if they see the same car, you know, with out-of-state plates in the same driveway over the course of 90 days, bingo, they can collect on it. You know, now some people actually have a garage or they park their car way hidden up in the back so you can't see it from the street.
Yeah.
But these private companies are bringing in big money for the cities, but they're keeping almost half of that money for themselves.
Yeah.
That's a heck of a finder's fee there. And that's another teacher's salary or two. You know, that's another library that doesn't have to get closed. So why are we paying private companies $1 million+ to do the job that the DMV could be doing rather more efficiently, perhaps?
Absolutely. TalkingTransportation.blogspot.com, also the Connecticut Mirror and other locations. Read Jim's piece. It's very good on license plate fraud. We're not talking about people who do things legally, but people who are actually breaking a law. Jim Cameron. Jim, always good to chat with you, my friend. Stay safe. Two hands on the wheel, and we'll talk, okay?
Absolutely. See you in Montana, man.
Yes. Thanks, Jim. Here's a guy we love hearing from once a week, usually on Mondays right around this time. He has a column. He has one up today, in fact, at the Connecticut News Junkie, ctnewsjunkie.com. You can also read his other blog, his other regular publication, Red Meat for Mushy Moderates, at substack.com. The one and only, you know him, you love him, Terry Cowgill. Mr. Cowgill, sir, good afternoon. How are you?
Well, thank you. I'm not bad. I overheard your previous discussion on having a full-time legislature.
Yeah.
And just before we get to Roland,
sure.
I actually wrote a column on this in 2020, right about the time that the pandemic was taking hold, coincidentally.
Yeah.
And I argued for a full-time legislature, but reduce the size of it. So make it about you know how the legislature works in Nebraska, right?
No, how does
Nebraska
it work?
Nebraska has what they call a unicameral legislature.
That I knew, yeah.
Yeah, so reduce the size of it to about the size of that the state Senate is now. And make it unicameral and increase the salary. I'd say, you know, increase it up to $100,000 a year. But, you know, one of the reasons that, you know, the Connecticut lawmakers typically have very, very sloppy and weak ethics laws.
Oh, you think?
And, yeah. One of the reasons, though, is these ethic laws are in place is because everybody who works there, almost everybody except for maybe the speaker and, you know, the Senate pro tem, president and stuff.
Yeah.
They all have to have outside jobs.
Yeah.
And so they take jobs that normally anybody who looks at it would say that it's a conflict of interest.
Sure.
Like, you remember Joe Arisimowitz, who was the Speaker of the House at one point?
Yeah, yeah.
He was an education coordinator for one of the largest public employee unions in the state.
Yeah.
And we had people like Mae Flexer, you know, who was lobbying for a union.
Yeah.
We had other people like
well, you have Julie. You have Julie.
Larry Shapiro.
Yeah. Oh, I used to know Larry. Yeah. We have Julie Kushner now, who I guess is a retired UAW person, and you probably have been following this from afar. She's like publicly scolding Lamont because he doesn't want to sign this unemployment for strikers bill. And Terry, you're right. Yeah. I said this earlier in the show. In other states, people with a background like that, they wouldn't be allowed. They just wouldn't.
No, absolutely not. But I do remember being really shocked to learn that Larry Caffaro, who was the House Republican leader, you know, 10, 12 years ago, he had a side gig at Brown Rudnick, which is a law firm that they regularly lobbies lawmakers in the Capitol.
Yeah.
So the law actually allowed the firm to lobby Caffaro himself while he was in the Capitol, even though he worked for the same firm. I mean, but a lot of these lax ethics laws in the Capitol are there because lawmakers have to have outside income.
Yeah.
And if you said, look, run for this seat, we'll pay you $100,000 a year, but no outside employment.
Got to quit.
All right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that might work.
I remember my funniest moment. You'll love this, Terry, knowing the guy as well. I asked Larry Caffaro once, and maybe he's listening, you know, Fairfield County guy. I asked Larry, why don't you run for governor? And his response to me, Terry, here's the quote, Paul, enough people don't like me as it is. I don't need any more. And speaking of a love-hate relationship with Connecticut, former governor John G. Roland, we have a couple of minutes left. You wrote a great piece about him. You actually occupied a radio studio with him for on a couple of occasions.
Yes, I did. I was a call-in guest on his show a few times, and then he had me in the studio. Of course, I mean, I had only done small town radio, and to walk into a place like TIC, you know, where they have engineers all over the place,
and secretaries and
greeters. It's pretty amazing. Anyway, I got to know him a bit doing these shows, and he is a hell of a charming guy.
Oh, yeah.
And I can see how he got as far as he did. He made me feel welcome. And the fact that I had written critically about him earlier and he still agreed to have me on the show.
Yeah.
I thought, wow, you know, that says a lot. But he liked my writing and all that stuff. So I got to know him a bit. The last time I was on there, just after that, was when he got into trouble with Lisa Wilson Foley and doing the illegal campaign work.
Uh-huh.
And then all of the you know what hit the fan. He wound up being charged again for corruption.
Mm-hmm.
And he was this time he did not take a plea bargain.
No.
And of course, that means he was going to go to jail if he was convicted. And so but there were all these different things that he did while in office that he could have been investigated for.
Sure.
Like the $220 million unsecured loan to Enron. And, you know, he sold his Washington, D.C. condo at an inflated price with the help of the lobbyist. It just went on and on.
Yeah. Yeah. And Terry, I have always said, and I said this when we first heard of it, I'm fully okay for pardons. If there's some sort of egregious conduct in the judicial process or somebody really got screwed here. But again, I know John Roland as well. I haven't seen him in years. We always got along. He sat in on a couple of radio shows like you did. He sat in with us years ago. But I mean, this to me, I just shook my head when I heard it, you know?
Well, I heard some people say, well, you know, it's a good thing that, you know, he'll have a fresh start. He served his time, and I'm thinking, yeah, he served his time, and the reward for that is you get out and you're a free man. And so what was the purpose of giving him a pardon, Donald Trump giving him a pardon when it wouldn't let him out of jail? And he was already out. So I don't really understand the logic behind it from that standpoint.
Yeah.
Do you? What makes sense there?
I have stopped trying to understand some logic in people. I just sit here and I just, because when I do, my hair hurts. What little hair I have left, I get a pain in my scalp. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah.
I don't. Folks, you can read his stuff. He has a very good column on this at the Connecticut News Junkie, ctnewsjunkie.com. And, of course, Red Meat for Mushy Moderates at the substack.com. Terry, continue good rehab there with that hip, and we'll catch up, all right?
All right. Thanks very much, Paul.
Thanks, bye. Terry. Appreciate it. Terry Cowgill there. A return visit from one of our favorite contributors here to talk about a wild story that broke over the weekend. If you're following with some trepidation anything that's going on between Russia and Ukraine, and we've been doing this now for the better part of a couple, 3 years on this, an amazing job pulled off by Ukraine, apparently being able to blow up several Russian aircraft recently and keeping it very quiet until it happened. Joining us right now, CBS News military analyst and retired U.S. Army Colonel Jeff McCausland. Colonel, how are you, sir? Great to have you back. How are you?
Doing very well. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Well, thank you, Colonel. And man, explain this. I mean, this operation that the Ukraine did here on these Russian planes, this is something out of a Saturday movie, isn't it?
Yeah, this is extraordinary. It's sort of Mission Impossible. What they did was, and apparently it may have taken them as long as a year and a half to actually plan this particular operation, is they struck five different sites where the Russians have strategic bombers based. One in northern Russia near Murmansk, up near the Arctic Circle. Two in sort of central Russia, not terribly far from Moscow. And then two that are much farther out to the east and the far east of the Russian Federation. So several of these locations were literally thousands of miles from the Russian-Ukrainian border. What apparently they did is over time they were able to infiltrate trucks loaded with smaller quadcopter drones, so they could get close to these particular sites and then launch those drones to attack these particular sites. Doing that in close proximity meant they could use smaller drones because they didn't have the range if they tried to launch them, you know, from the Ukraine, number one.
Mm.
And number two, obviously gained a certain amount of surprise in the attack in terms of Russian response and air defense. But the result was the destruction of up to, it suggested, one-third of the strategic bomber force of the
wow.
Russian Federation.
Wow.
Literally billions of dollars of aircraft being destroyed may have also damaged the Russian Northern Fleet headquarters in Vermont.
Mm-hmm.
But consider the fact that the Ukrainians were employing drones. Some probably cost only a few thousand dollars
yeah.
to manufacture. Let's say maybe $5,000. And they destroyed a $500 million airplane in the process, which is a ratio I think anybody would think was pretty extraordinary.
Yeah, and Colonel, like you said, we didn't see any evidence of Tom Cruise involved in this at all, did
right.
we?
did yeah.
we? So yeah. let me ask you this then, from an operational point of view, and in your experience, I would think Ukraine may have had some intel help on this, whether it might have been, I don't know, you tell me, satellite imagery or stuff like that, because again, as you say, to get that deeply in a Russian territory, would you say they must have had help or not?
I would say they must have had some kind of help inside the Russian Federation. There's no doubt about it. Now, many Ukrainians obviously speak Russian. Obviously, their appearance look like Russians. So their ability to infiltrate may have been fairly easy. At the same time, you would assume some kind of assistance occurred because they had to physically get these trucks with the drones into the Russian Federation and into Russia very, very deeply. In terms of the overall targeting, less certain. These were well-known bases.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, not a site that was not well-known. Everybody knows the Russians have a naval headquarters in Vermont. That's no big surprise. But doing it very closely, like I said, allows you to gain a certain amount of surprise. So perhaps their air defense systems were not quite as ready to engage the aircraft as they were coming in. But I'm sure the Russians will make some accusations against the West, probably the United States,
yeah.
in terms of providing them intelligence and targeting information that facilitated the operation.
Amazing. Retired U.S. Army Colonel Jeff McCausland. Colonel, always a pleasure. Thank you, sir, and take care.
Take care.
Pretty appreciate it. There you go.